Cricket Hermas. We wish you a Merry Cricket Hermas. We wish you a Merry Cricket Hermas and a Happy New Year. You weren't expecting that, were you, Sid?
I wasn't, no. We're probably going to get a copyright strike now. Who owns the copyright to We Wish You a Merry Christmas?
I don't know. It's hundreds of years old, isn't it? Anyway, let's, without further ado, welcome people to episode 144 of the Cricket Her Weekly. And we hope that you have a very lovely Christmas or happy holidays, whatever you're celebrating. We are recording this on Christmas Eve. I think it's going to go out today, Sid.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But look out for our big Christmas quiz tomorrow. 12 months, 12 questions, as always.
Yeah, so, it's quite
get
hard.
On the website next year. Yeah, Raf got two wrong, so can you do better than Raf?
You weren't meant to tell people my score.
Oh, sorry. I'll cut that bit, I promise, Raf.
Yeah, so we are actually going to do our kind of annual review of the year episode in next week's Cricket Her Weekly. This week we are, well, there's been actually cricket and cricket news going on until just a few days ago. It feels like it's been a very kind of hectic crickety build-up to Christmas in many ways, so we're going to talk about that in this week's episode. So England v West Indies concluded this week.
Did.
Not really any surprises. England won all eight of the matches that were played on the tour, and the last one was probably the most miserable. I think it was actually done and dusted within 2 hours because England bowled West Indies out for their lowest ever total in international T20 cricket. So that was a bit of a disappointing end to the tour in some ways, but kind of also reflective of the cricket that we've seen generally, Sid.
Yeah, it was. It was one of those, though, that it was just like, it was just disappointing. It wasn't even fun to watch England, you know, all over the West Indies like that. You know, I'm sure it was fun for the England girls, so it was a sort of one-off thing, but we were really watching it going, this is just a bit dull, really, because there was just no competition there. Anyway, let's talk about what the takeaways from the tour are. There was an interesting chat with the press that John Lewis did yesterday. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about him. And I think a really good result for him from his first tour.
Definitely.
I mean, you can't argue with the numbers. He actually explicitly said that he'd said to the girls, you know, during the tour that, you know, he didn't mind if they lost a game, you know, that he wanted them to be playing this sort of fearless brand of cricket. And everyone's talked about this fearless brand of cricket, but he was quite explicit in, it's almost sort of critical, you know, of Lisa Kitely, really, and saying that some of the England players were not playing fearlessly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's trying to change that mindset. You know, and England have mostly played pretty positively. You know, and you know, the pitches have been difficult, and we've been a little bit critical sometimes, going they could have, you know, maybe scored a bit quicker. And but you know, it's a work in progress. I'm sure John Lewis would agree. But overall, you know, he's taken away, you know, a very good result from his first tour. At the end of the day, if they had lost any games, particularly the championship games, those it was really important to try and bag 6 points from them, having lost all those matches to India. You know, and he's, you know, he can take that away, and he can, you know, enjoy his Christmas dinner, as you've written for your piece in The Guardian. He can enjoy his Christmas dinner and mince pies, really.
Yeah.
So
the team are talking quite positively about him, aren't they?
Saying that, you know, the players are, you know, feeling much more positive and much happier about things. You know, there have been a few difficulties over the summer. We know it's not a secret because of what happened with Nat Siver. That's good. He did say something interesting about, he said, oh yeah, there have been some tears, because Raf actually asked him about, you know, the differences with, she'd asked him originally when he first appointed, so what are the differences between coaching men and coaching women? And we talked about this in the podcast, and, you know, he'd said kind of, well, I don't really see a difference. You coach the individual, therefore, you know, that's the focus. But he did kind of hit on some of the differences. He said, oh, well, there's been a few more tears than there would have been in the men's game. You know, and tears are something that happens, you know, when people don't get selected and things. And, you know, if you're the coach, then you have to deal with that. But, you know, it does seem that he's dealt with that. And, you know, the players have still come out the other end feeling reasonably positive about things, because that's the noises that we're hearing in the background.
Well, the other thing is that he has explicitly said that he wanted everyone to get a game, and he's been kind of revolving the players. And, you know, there's going to be difficult decisions ahead, because ultimately he's got to decide who his kind of favoured 11 are in the World Cup, so there will probably be more tears coming. But on this tour, it feels like he has actually kind of been very much giving people opportunities and kind of mixing it up a bit.
Yeah, no, and you know, everyone's had a game, and you know, he did say, you know, I mean, he wasn't not critical of everybody. He said, oh, he kind of sort of criticised Lauren Winfield, didn't criticise her directly, but he said, oh, she'll be disappointed she didn't make more runs, aka I'm disappointed she didn't make more runs.
That's because he was explicitly asked about her.
Yeah, so that's true.
He didn't single her out.
Absolutely, yeah, that's worth saying. Yeah, you know. So, yeah, and he said that he would have liked to have played Izzy Wong a couple more times, but obviously she's had a niggle that she's been nursing. Mm. It'll be interesting to see if he does take a risk on selecting her for the T20 World Cup. But, of course, all that's to come, and I'm sure we'll be discussing that in future
we
podcasts.
Will. Yeah, I thought that the thing about the tears was interesting, because what he actually went on to say was that he felt that that was positive, because he thinks that it's more healthy for players to show their emotions. And so actually he's kind of saying that he thinks in some ways that that ability for players in the women's game to show when they're upset is better than trying to keep it in, as sometimes happens in men's cricket. So I thought that was interesting.
We might come back to that theme in a little bit later in the episode, Raph.
Well,
funny that.
I mean, overall, as a tour, if you're kind of asking me, I guess you're going to ask me my thoughts.
What are your thoughts, Raph?
As I've written for The Guardian in a piece that's going to come out in a few days' time.
Available in all good newsagents on the 28th, 29th?
I don't know exactly when, but it will be sometime between Christmas and New Year, so sometime Twixtmas, as I believe people refer to it.
Do we get Twixes, Raph? I like Twixes.
Well, you can go and buy some from the supermarket if you want. But there will be plenty of other chocolate. Anyway, Sid.
I like Twixes.
So my overall takeaways.
Serious podcast will resume now.
My overall takeaways are that I think in some ways it's been a positive tour for England. Heather Knight in her kind of press conference just before the final match talked about it as being important to win because it boosts your confidence. And I think that's absolutely right. And I think that England had a difficult summer with the Commonwealth Games and then that loss to India. And actually this will have given them a psychological boost and they needed that. Ahead of the World Cup. On the other hand, you could argue that actually it's not been the best warm-up, and I think we talked last week about how it compares in some ways unfavourably between the India v Australia series, in the sense of actually that having been a really amazing warm-up for those two teams ahead of the World Cup, whereas England are going to probably go into that tournament kind of quite underbaked and you know, very much in a kind of mindset of, well, we've walked all over a team who are much weaker than us, but we're now going to come up against proper opposition. Interestingly, I had a look at the World Cup schedule, and England's opening match of the World Cup is actually against West Indies, so it's going to very much feel probably like a bit of deja vu initially, but obviously once they're past the group stage of that World Cup, well, hopefully, you know, then they are going to be up against much stiffer opposition, and that's going to be the real test for John Lewis. So
absolutely.
In some ways, this has been a bit of a dress rehearsal for a major 2023 coming up.
Yeah.
What about from the West Indies perspective? Because it has been quite a difficult series for them, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, I mean, we've just seen new lows, basically. And it must be really, really depressing for them. And, you know, several people have written, I mean, Mel Story wrote a long thread on Twitter, which is worth kind of going and searching out if you haven't seen that. Will McPherson's written some stuff about this as well. We're seeing everything come home to roost about the lack of infrastructure in West Indies cricket. And I think, you know, we think that this is about lack of infrastructure partly, but it's not just about lack of infrastructure for the women's game, is it?
No.
It's not just the women's game problem, is it, Raph?
No, definitely not. And I think that makes it a much harder problem to tackle in some ways, because, you know, you can be critical of countries like India or England or to some extent Australia, and you can go, well, look at what you're not doing for women's cricket, because you've got money. You've got money to do it. West Indies cricket just don't have any money. And they're struggling to hold on to players in men's international cricket, because it's so much more lucrative for them to go off and play in franchises around the world. And that's been the case for a number of years. Quite a few people in the men's game have sort of said this is a really sad state of affairs and what do we do about it? Well, you know, so it's not as simple as just going, okay, well, you need to you know, take some money and set up a new infrastructure for the women, because
yeah, you can't just take some money out of the men's game in West Indies cricket in quite the way that you could do in some other countries.
There really isn't any. Now, that's not to say that the money that there is, I guess, couldn't be distributed more equitably, because there is obviously a stronger infrastructure for West Indies men's cricket than there is for women's cricket. But I don't know that there are necessarily any easy answers to the question of how do you hang on to players like Dottin. And, you know, to some extent, Hayley Matthews as well.
Yeah, and I think we've discussed this before as well. It's all about those unknown players as well. It's all about the ones that, you know, that are going off and playing soccer, you know, or playing basketball or doing track and field, because of those opportunities that there are available to West Indian women and girls to go to college in America and get sports scholarships, you know, and that just feels like the obvious thing to do. If you're good at sport, that's what you're going to pursue. You're going to pursue a sports scholarship in the United States, which will allow you to get a university degree and potentially a career in, you know, in soccer or in basketball, which are both professional sports in the United States, you know, or in track and field, where, you know, you've got the potential to go on and, you know, earn some really serious money compared to what there is in cricket, which, you know, I mean, you know, Hayley Matthews herself is going to, you know, make a good career out of cricket, but she's not going to walk away from cricket a multimillionaire, that's for sure. You know, and I just hope that Hayley Matthews herself can stick this out. She's still quite young. She's only, you know, in her early to mid-20s. And, you know, there's a long way to go. And how long is she going to want to carry on, you know, carrying this team and dealing with just, like, this weight that's on her? You know, and it's just going to be all about her, and I fear for the future, really. I honestly do. But,
it's very difficult for her, and I guess, you know, to some extent what they've done is, well, I don't know this, but my guess is that actually they've given her the captaincy partly as a way of staving that off and saying, you know, oh, here you go, have the prestige of being the captain. And also, I imagine that the captain's contract is worth a bit more money than some of the other contracts. That's certainly how it works in England. They have a separate category for the captain's contract. So you'd imagine she's being paid a little bit more. But as you say, it's that kind of psychological weight of carrying the team, you know, almost more than any other player in any other team in the world. It's all on her, and that's really tough.
Yep. Okay, so moving on from that, let's go back to talk about Australia. And Australia have announced a squad for their matches against Pakistan, and guess who's back?
Guess who's back?
Look who's back, look who's back.
Lanning's back. Oh, I've given it away.
You have. Meg Lanning is back. Alyssa Healy is going to sit this one out. The understanding, what we're hearing, is that she's not. There's no risk of her not playing in the World Cup. This is very much, you know, like, let's not take any chances on this one. So Alyssa Healy is sitting out. Tally McGrath's vice captain. Meg Lanning back as captain, Raf.
She is, yeah. And I'm a bit surprised, I have to say, because in everything that I've said, and I think I've said it quite a few times on the Cricket Her Weekly, that actually I was expecting her to come back, but not as captain. Because it seemed to me very much that it was the aspects of the captaincy that were the things that were getting her down, and that were the things that were making her want to take a break. Again, we don't have any insight in information here. This was just me speculating. So I'm quite surprised. It's obviously really good news in the sense of having her back, not from an England perspective, because you know, she's probably going to end up having a very destructive World Cup, and you can easily see her hitting 100 in the final, and you know, if England are there, then just walking all over them. But it is great news to see her back. There was a really interesting Instagram post that she wrote, though. And I've just picked out what I think is the most interesting quote. She says, "I've always played my cards pretty close to my chest. It's okay to ask for help and admit that you don't have everything under control." Now, that's really interesting, because from a journalist's perspective, Meg Lanning has always been somebody who, if you try to sit down and do an interview with her, she's well known for not really saying anything. She's really good at, she can talk for half an hour in very kind of generic terms about how everything's brilliant, and but she doesn't give you a hook. She doesn't give you any kind of, there's like almost like a bit of a lack of emotion.
Yeah, and nobody really knows who Meg Lanning is.
Yeah,
like, who's the real? You actually pitched her, who's the real Meg Lanning piece?
Yeah.
But nobody wants to be interviewed for it.
Exactly.
She didn't want the world to know who the real Meg Lanning was.
That was a couple of years ago. And so I feel that to some extent that state of affairs has been brought about by Cricket Australia, and that to some extent the board have to take a bit of responsibility for her feeling. Like, you know, I have to play my cards. Yeah, I have to play my cards close to my chest. And what she's now saying is that, you know, she's been captain since she was 21 years old. She's been captain for nearly a decade. And suddenly, it's just been going on too long, this need to maintain that kind of
poker face.
Yeah,
permanent poker
that sort
face.
Of robotic facade. She can't do it anymore. And that, you know, that's because I feel like there's a kind of cultural thing there of like, well, you're the captain, so you have to maintain this facade and you have to not be critical. And, you know, you have to kind of not say what you really think about things. And what we've seen in England is that I think that Heather Knight started off a bit like that, but recently has felt a bit more able to be critical and to be able to speak a little bit more openly about what she really thinks. And that feels much healthier to me. So what I hope is that there will be some learning from this experience that we've seen with Meg Lanning, and actually that Cricket Australia will be able to say to her, look, if you feel this way about something, then it's okay for you to say that. And it's okay if you have if somebody has a crap day at the office, it's okay for you to say that. Like, or if you're feeling upset about something, it's okay to say that. And there isn't really any reason why she shouldn't be able to say things like that. And so yeah, I just found that Instagram post quite interesting, and I hope that what we learn from this situation with Meg Lanning is that we need to develop a bit of a healthier culture where your kind of senior leading players, for whatever country they play for, actually do feel able to talk about the issues that matter to them.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's really important.
Okay. Now, finally this week, we're going to talk about a book. So this is a book called The Bodyline Fix by Marion Stell, who is Australian. And Raph has been reading this book. For any kids that have tuned in, a book is like a Kindle, but you have to turn the pages yourself. Feels like a lot of effort to me. but Raph, you turned every page. What did you make of it?
Yeah, great book. And I would thoroughly recommend it. Obviously, any book that talks about the history of women's cricket is very welcome. This one has a particular angle on it. And actually, the kind of way in is basically saying, well, women's international cricket, the first England-Australia international encounter after the infamous Bodyline incident was England women going to Australia in the English winter of 1934-35. And then, a couple of years after that, Australia came back to England, returned the visit in 1937. And so she goes into a lot of detail about those two tours. And the argument is kind of that this was a way for those two nations to heal from Bodyline via women's cricket. I'm not sure I totally buy the argument. I think it's a really interesting argument and certainly worth reading the book and kind of forming your own opinions. So I'm not sure I totally agree with that argument in the sense of I don't know that women's cricket at that time was kind of big enough to shoulder that responsibility, or that there were enough people paying attention to it for it to actually kind of to sort of heal that rift. And in a way, I don't know that it's fair for us to kind of put that on women's cricket either. But it's a great book. And one of the best things about it is that Marion Stell was actually among a team of researchers who, I think it was in the late 80s, early 90s, they actually went and did a bunch of oral history interviews with some of the women who'd been on that first tour, or those first two tours. And it's a brilliant insight into their experiences.
Of course, many of those women have passed away now. There's
exactly.
Very few survivors from
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
So how great that those interviews were done, right?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And from a historian's perspective, well, from anyone's perspective, it's really exciting. That's those are the most interesting bits of the book, is actually when you get these paragraphs of, and it's direct quotes from these women, and they're remembering their experiences, and that's so wonderful to read, and amazing now that kind of those recordings that were done have now been sort of dug up and revived, and actually making them more accessible for people so that they can get that understanding into what it was like to be a woman, going on a boat to a different country and playing cricket in the 1930s. So would definitely recommend.
Okay, thanks very much. Well, we wish everybody that's celebrating a happy, happy Christmas or a happy anything that you're celebrating. And we will be back next week with an end of year episode. Until then, goodbye.